Hi, this is Harlem, and welcome to the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast, a podcast about all things Ubuntu. I hope that is fairly obvious, but sometimes, you know, you never know. Anyway, Peter will be joining us shortly for the news segment. Before I get to that, I just want to say a couple of things. This podcast was recorded on October 18th, which is, of course, the release date of Gutsy Gibbon. And I am going to, right now, apologize for the sound quality, especially on the Skype call that Peter and I were conducting. His sound was a little bit staticky, and I'm not sure why that was happening. Might have been because the a lot of network usage that day. He was doing a couple of downloads. I was also on the internet doing some stuff as well. But anyway, that being that, we did manage to get a podcast out, and we talk extensively about the new things in Gutsy Gibbon. And so I hope you enjoy it today. And he also, Peter also has a new man page minute called Update DB. I hope you enjoy that. For those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome. I hope you find this podcast enjoyable as well as educational. You have the opportunity to, of course, talk back to us. You can leave us some email at freshubuntu@gmail.com. And myriad of other ways to get a hold of us. You can also go to our website and leave comments at freshubuntu.org. With that, I thank you for joining me today, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. We will be getting along shortly. And good afternoon, or whatever time it may be that you're listening to this. My name is Harlem, and I'm here with Peter, who is right now downloading several versions of Gutsy Gibbon. Is that right? Several versions? A couple of versions? Or just Ubuntu?
Well, no, they're just Ubuntu at the moment. I'm pulling down one machine. I'm trying to download an ISO version via an FTP site. I forget where. I think somewhere in Finland. I'm also in the process of downloading the Ubuntu 7.10 DVD ISO image via BitTorrent, and it's telling me I have approximately 4 days left on that download. And at the same time, I have my Feisty Fawn desktop doing an upgrade and trying to upgrade to Ubuntu. And unfortunately, all the mirrors and the app repositories all seem to be pretty slow today, which we kind of expected, unfortunately.
Yeah, today is October 18th, of course, the first day that Gutsy Gibbon comes out, and as usual, just like the other releases, the servers get slammed, and everything just slows down to a trickle, partly due to the popularity of Ubuntu, and partly due to their server capacity, although I thought that they might have beefed up their server capacity, but again, I may be misinformed. But in any case, this is a podcast about Ubuntu and all things Ubuntu, and this week we are going to do something a little bit different. There wasn't really a whole bunch of news to begin with. There's a couple of articles that I will touch on and basically just highlight, and not much really to talk about. But today we are going to talk about some of the things that both Peter and I are looking forward to in Gutsy Gibbon, hoping that you are also downloading as well. If you are new to the podcast, I want to welcome you, and I hope you enjoy the podcast and find it useful and educational. Let's go ahead and get started with the news. I just want to highlight a couple of things that I thought were relevant this week, and a couple of articles, one in the Wall Street Journal Online and one in the New York Times. And I wanted to highlight these articles because Ubuntu is getting out there in the popular media, in the old media, as they say. Newspapers, and even though there are online versions of the newspapers, they are still the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. And the first one I want to talk about is the Wall Street Journal one by Lee Gomes, and his is entitled, How Far Behind Is Linux? And I want to read you the very first sentence of his article, because I thought it was a little bit controversial, at least to me. It goes on to say that if some of Linus Torvalds' own family, now Linus Torvalds is, of course, as you know, the creator of Linux, the Linux kernel, if some of his own family members back in Finland don't use Linux, what hope is there for the rest of us? Now, it goes on to actually tell you a very good story about Linux and the rising popularity of it and how it is becoming a prominent player in the desktop market. Anyway, the article was a very good article. It goes on to say, why don't you give Ubuntu a try? And it directs you to the Ubuntu.com website. For that matter, an overall, you know, neutral to positive article. And very well pleased that these types of media outlets are highlighting it and making it a feature. We go on to the next article from the New York Times, and this was dated for today, Thursday, October 18th, 2007. And the author of the article was John Markoff of the New York Times. And he goes on to say, let me give you the headline of it, Ubuntu plans iCandy for desktop computers and beyond. Now, this is a somewhat also, again, a neutral to positive article out there in the old media. However, a lot of people seem to think that the 3D effects, the iCandy, so to speak, is the end-all be-all. I have tried the 3D effects, and I overall wasn't too crazy about it, and so I initially turned it off. So I don't know about you, Peter. Do you like the 3D effects?
I do like them. I don't know. I'm not sure that is going to be what, you know, makes or breaks users. I'm a big fan of the Linux Action Show, but I know they really, really, really hype, you know, CompIS Fusion, and they're totally excited that the fact that they're going to have those desktop effects enabled by default. My experience with them is not. It's not so good. I like the desktop effects, but the most common one that you see normally is the wobbly windows. And yeah, that's kind of cool, but right off the bat, it costs you the window resistance and the snapping. So when you go to drag a window up near another window, it makes it so that they line up, you know, so they don't overlap. It gives you a little bit of a resistance there. It makes it easy to tile things. And I really prefer that to the wobbliness. So I don't like the fact that I have to trade one for the other. And also, on a number of machines, I have noticed that the desktop effects actually have caused some problems. When I first upgraded a machine to Feisty Fawn and desktop effects were available, I had to install them, but I put them on, I had a problem with game. And all of a sudden, game wasn't showing any text. So I'd be typing, and I could, you know, type and press enter, and whoever was on the other end could see what I was saying, but I couldn't see what they were saying. And I thought the game was bugged. And then it happened with another application, and I said, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And I went off into the barrel manager, and I turned it off, and all of a sudden everything started working again. So, you know, I'm hoping that things are a little more stable now that CompIS Fusion is, you know, like more official here. But my initial reaction was, I don't know. I'm a little, a little concerned. I would rather have a stable working desktop than a whiz-bang, glitzy thing that's going to crash. Because in my opinion, that's what Windows Vista is, and I don't want any part of that.
So, enough of the two articles. This is, of course, October the 18th and the first day of the Gutsy Gibbon release, and people are frantically trying to get on the servers just to get a little piece of the action, and I know Peter is doing it right now as we speak. I think you're doing a couple of downloads. I am going to have to wait until after this podcast is finished. I will have something to look forward to at least later on. But in any case, so Peter, how are your downloads going?
Pretty poorly. The one that I started about 3 hours ago is still only at 7%, and it does now appear to have completely hung. Firefox is saying that I can pause and cancel it, but I haven't seen that thing move for about half an hour. I also have a BitTorrent download going on, and let's see, right now I'm down to 3 days remaining. I'm up to a whopping 32 kilobytes per second on the download.
And how many days did you start off with?
First day estimate I got was 92 days. Yeah, so yeah. About 3 months from now I'd have my copy of Gutsy Gibbon. So right. I'm glad that estimate's coming down a little bit.
Ship it discs. You might want to try ship it discs.
Good idea. Good idea. And also across the room, my upgrade from Feisty Fawn to Gutsy Gibbon is progressing. And I had to do a few steps. I followed the standard method nowadays. Previously, I had tried, when I went to EdgyEft from Dapper, I did everything via the command line and hand-modified my sources.list file so that I could do it all from the command line. And that didn't go so well. But I'm not sure that that was the problem, because if you remember, lots and lots of people, I think like 44% or something, reported having problems upgrading to Edgy. So I'm not sure that just doing it from the command line was the cause of my problems. But anyway, with Feisty going to Gutsy, what I did is I booted up the machine just now, and it said, hey, you have 6 updates available. So I clicked on the little icon, and Update Manager came up. And one of the things it said right at the top of the screen was new version available. You know, you can upgrade to version 7.10, and there's a little update button. Upgrade button. So I clicked on that, and nothing happened for a few minutes. And then I got an informational window popping up telling me, you know, hey, you've got a whole new version here, and you know, proceed if you want. I clicked OK. Several minutes went by and nothing happened, and then we started chatting, and I looked back a few minutes later and it was at the password prompt. It was asking me for my password to actually start the update manager. So I fired that up and it began downloading the new update manager. And once that downloaded, it warned me that some of my sources would be disabled, some of my third-party sources, and I think that was some work that I had done while I was trying to configure Wine to allow me to play World of Warcraft under Ubuntu. So I wasn't too worried about that, because I can always put them back later if I have to. And so I set it to continue. Some time went by, and I got a message popping up saying that support for some applications has been discontinued, and it gave me a long list of those apps that are going away. And I didn't read through all of them. I noticed a few VNC, remote control related ones, and some others. A lot of libraries and things, which have basically just been replaced. And then it listed all the things that are being upgraded. And right now, I believe I'm downloading something like 1,032 new files. And it's in process right now. So I guess that's probably going to be the first of my machines that gets updated, because you know, it's moving along, and the others or not.
Yeah. Well, I hope it does go well for you. And it would be interesting to know, and you might want to shoot me an email later when you're finished, that if it was an unattended upgrade, because I know I did the update manager upgrade on my laptop when I upgraded from Edgy to Feisty. And again, I hate to reiterate this, because I think I've said this 3 times in the last 3 podcasts, that it took me the better part of 1 full day to get it downloaded and upgraded from Edgy to Feisty. So, and mainly because it was asking me a lot of questions in between the downloads. You know, if I wanted to do this or if I wanted to do that, it needed my input, basically, to continue the download. So it'll be interesting to know if it was unattended.
Well, it did call for a fair amount of interaction up to this point, as I said, but I'm thinking it's going to be fairly automatic from this point on. Now, interesting thing, when you were mentioning the time, I looked over and it was saying I had about 4 hours and 39 minutes left in my download. So I was kind of excited about that. And then I looked back and, let's see, right now, yep, right now we're at 4 hours and 30 minutes. But at one point it said 22 hours remaining, too.
Wow. Okay.
So kind of hard to tell. But it keeps on settling back in like around the 4.5 hour range. So it's possible that sometime early this evening I'll be running Gutsy Gibbon, and I look forward to that.
Great, great. So why don't we go ahead, and we're going to go to the release notes of Gutsy Gibbon, and you know, kind of highlight some of the features that are new since 7.04, and some of the features that both Peter and I are looking forward to. How do you want to do this, Peter? Do you want to just go down the list, or do you want to just, why don't you start off for us?
Yeah, why don't we just let's go down the list, and we'll pick out the things that that matter to us, and talk about why we think they matter. Okay, well, first thing on the list is GNOME 2.20. and we've talked about this on a previous podcast. And GNOME has lots of new features, new updates to Evolution, updates to their included web browser. I guess that's not going to affect us, though, right? Because the Epiphany browser isn't included by default in Ubuntu, is it?
That's correct. You just get Firefox? You just get Firefox.
So they take that out. Of course, you can add it in if you want. New image viewing tools, new document viewers, lots of cool stuff. I think one of the interesting things I heard about was apparently GNOME has new power management capabilities, so it's going to give you better laptop battery life. But an important safety feature I heard is that GNOME will now automatically detect if your battery has been part of a recall.
Wow.
And that's really cool because I know a number of folks who, you know, back when Dell was having all their problems last year, a number of folks who never even knew that there was a battery recall going on. So now GNOME will, like, tell you, I guess, you know, the power management tool will just come up and say, you know, yo, this battery's got problems, you know, trade it in quick. And I think that's awesome. That's a real, you know, it can actually be a real safety thing, you know, safety tool. So
yeah,
I'm really happy about that.
That is kind of cool. I wonder how they do that. I mean, it's just, it must be...
Batteries have a lot of intelligence. Mm-hmm. Batteries have a lot of intelligence built into them. You know, they have circuitry on them. And one of the things that I'm assuming you can read out of that is the serial number. So if you can read the serial number, so can your computer.
Right.
And there have to be online databases where you can look these up. So I assume that the GNOME programmers, you know, tapped into some sort of API where you can look these up, and, you know, there you go.
We have next is the tracker, which, you know, I'm not so fond of, but I know that you are. They went from Beagle to the tracker indexer, and for some reason I don't exactly understand why they did it, but they did it. It may be faster, mm-hmm. it may be much quicker, much cleaner code.
I'm hoping. I haven't had the pleasure of checking it out yet, so once my machine gets upgraded, I'm going to check it out, and I'm hopefully going to be pleased by the results and use it to index all my stuff.
Moving down the list.
Fast user switching.
Mm-hmm.
Fast user switching, I actually end up using this a little more than I would have thought. Fast user switching first gained popularity, let me see. I believe Mac OS 9, I think, had this. I think that was the first mainstream operating system.
Hmm.
And then Windows XP came along with that. Fast user switching, if you're not familiar with the concept, it's basically you can be logged in, and then somebody else who has an account on your system can also log in, and your session just gets pushed off to the side for a while they log on and do their thing. It's kind of useful if you're going to, like, if you're using a machine and someone, you know, says, hey, can I just pop on and check my email for a second? Or if a non-privileged user is using your machine and you want to pop on to install some new software or something like that, fast user switching, it basically, you know, lets that person get up out of your way for a little bit so that they can use the machine, or so that you can use the machine and do what you need to do, and then you can get off and they resume right back where they were. I think that's kind of handy. It's not something you see so much used in a corporate environment, but in a small, you know, small environment, a home environment, it's pretty handy.
Now, it mentions here without the inconvenience of entering your username or password numerous times. So there has to be some level of trust between each user, so that the user currently doesn't get onto another user's profile.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I'm not sure how they're going to handle that. If they've got some kind of facility where you can just say, you know, like, I'm Joe user and I want to become, you know, Jane user or something, and you don't have to enter Jane's password, I would be really surprised about that. You know, from a security standpoint, it's just not cool.
Right, exactly. So, and maybe we can come back on this issue once it's all installed and we've used it for a few weeks, and later on you and I will talk, and a couple of other people will give their opinions about the usability of Gutsy Gibbon at a later podcast. But for now, that's something we should highlight for later on. Firefox plugins in Ubuntu, not so much different from the way you can get a plugin in Firefox natively. So I don't know how useful this is going to be, especially to me.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way. I'm not sure exactly. I noticed the first example they gave, they showed the Adobe Flash Player and the Ganache Flash Player installers. Mm-hmm. And both of these are available via the Add Remove Programs or Add Programs button from the main menu in GNOME now. So when I first saw that, I didn't see much of a big deal about it. But in addition, they say they show specific Firefox extensions, and I actually see a bunch that I use there, like Bookmarks FTP and Ad Blocker and stuff. So I don't know where they're going to be getting this repository, if they're just pulling this right off of mozdev.org or where they're getting the list. But, it could be kind of cool, save you a little time, because every time when I set up a new machine, well, usually I just move my profile around. I just, drag my whole Firefox profile from computer to computer.
Right.
But if I don't, if I'm on a new machine and I don't have access to my original for some reason, the first thing I do is I go down and, download these standard 5 or 6 extensions that I always want to have. And so if that can save me some time, and I don't have to Google all around to locate them, and I can all find them in one place, I'll be behind that. That could be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think this might be even a preemptive strike for getting plugins that are Linux compatible too. So for now, Adobe Flash Player, they do have a Linux version for it, and of course you can always use the Ganache Flash Player. Other than that, I think most of the other plugins and extensions work fairly well under Linux as they would under XP or even Mac OS. So let's go on to the next one is that both you and I both like is the dynamic screen configuration and the graphical configuration tool for X.
Yes, that I'm really looking forward to the dual monitor display thing. I think that'll be pretty neat. Although I did blog about how I set up dual monitors, I think it was a month or two ago. I'll put a link in the show notes. It wasn't all that terribly difficult. That's at blog.nicolaitis.com. I'll put a link to that so you can see some of the steps I did. It didn't all take all that long, but still, for a new user having to roll up their sleeves and edit the x.org, config file, I would not recommend that. I certainly would not recommend that my mother or father try that. Right. So having a graphical configuration utility for this, I think that's great. When I tried it in the beta version or in one of the alpha versions, it did not work at all for me. So I'm hoping that they've got that squared away and that is going to just be the bomb.
I'm hoping the same thing. And I know I haven't had too many problems with the x.org file or my X server or my screen. However, there was this one time when I was fooling around with it and I totally messed it all up and had to reinstall my Ubuntu system. So I'm very glad that this happened. 90% of the time, Ubuntu will get your screen resolution just right, or at least a resolution that you're okay with, and you can fully live with that kind of resolution, and that's fine. But there are going to be times when you switch screens, or maybe have a two screen setup, this will definitely come in very very helpful.
Okay, next we have fully automatic printer installation. And so basically that's plug-and-play printer support. I think that's great, especially since, it's something that Windows and Mac OS X have had for a while. For the most part, depending on the manufacturer and whose drivers you've installed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, plug-and-play printer installation, I think that's a good thing. That'll be nice. And handling a non-free device manager, they say that the restricted manager can now handle drivers which are free but which require non-free firmware to operate. I believe that my Broadcom wireless card on my Dell Latitude laptop falls into that category. So I'll be curious to see if it automatically configures that and can make it work now.
Yeah, well, cool. It does say it's all firmware or wireless cards with Broadcom chipsets. So this might be a boon for many of the people who have been having trouble with Wi-Fi issues. Now, the thing that I like about this is that I also did a podcast about attaching a HP printer to your Linux machine. And you had to go through all this stuff, you know, on the command line and download this and that kind of thing. This makes it a lot more simpler, a lot easier. Just plug it in and it'll set it up all. It seems to configure it automatically. Very good. Now, the restricted drivers, now I think this has been available since Feisty, but I think what is different here is that it will actually find you the restricted driver and ask you if you want to install it. I believe that's what's going on with this.
I thought the old one in Feisty did that.
Did it?
I don't know what's in... I thought so. I don't know. I didn't actually end up running Feisty on my Dell laptop, so I don't really know. No, I was running it on my HPs, which run the Intel wireless, and I don't believe I needed that.
Yeah, you probably didn't, but it's a lot easier now to switch over to Ubuntu than it was when I downloaded Dapper a year and a half ago. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, when I first started with Dapper on my laptop, I remember going through all kinds of different things and trying to use NDIS wrapper, trying to do it without NDIS wrapper. And I remember my wife and my stepson would sit there, you know, watch me as I pulled up a chair at the far end of the living room because I had to run an Ethernet cable to my laptop so I could fiddle with all these settings and, you know, download this firmware and cut the firmware out of a Windows download file. And I noticed that with each passing version, it's gotten a little bit easier, to get the wireless working. So I'm hoping that, you know, we're done now. It's just going to work, and, you know, there you go.
Yeah. So. And on that note, I know that there are many of us, including myself, I still dual boot on at least one of my computers with Windows XP, which has an NTFS drive. At one point, it was incompatible with Linux, and Linux, of course, uses an EXT file system. But now included in Gutsy is the ability to write to Windows NTFS partitions, and you can read and write to them. Where before in Feisty, it was available, you had to download an extra library or something. But you could only read them. And this will make it a little bit easier, especially for myself, because I still dual boot on one of my computers.
Minor correction. You could read NTFS partitions for several versions now. You've been able to read them. But you had to install NTFS 3G to get write access.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But what that would do is that would let you install a module, and then you could mount the partition as a writable drive, too. And it worked fairly well. But it was, there were some steps that needed to be done. And I believe we talked about in a previous podcast that this is going to be included, right out of the box on the live CD also. So for those of you who are doing data recovery on an NTFS drive, that's a really good thing. I also like it because I frequently, although we mostly nowadays what we do is we manage networks for small and mid-sized businesses. We get a number of times where we get, a single computer comes in and we need to just pull all the data off the machine because for whatever reason Windows won't boot. And I have to keep, FAT32 hard drives around because that's the only file system that can be read by Linux and by Windows. And now with the inclusion of NTFS 3G out of the box, we don't need to do that anymore, and I can drop that terrible FAT32 file system, and that is just terrific.
Yeah, and the reason this has some repercussions for the IT side of it, but the reason that the Ubuntu team did this, or the developers did this, was because they realized that a lot of people were dual booting and sharing information between an XP machine and a Linux machine that they were dual booting, so a lot of much easier transition Go ahead.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it shouldn't be any surprise to them because, you know, they make it so easy to set up a dual boot system with Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
So just for clarification, though, this is only required for reading NTFS partitions on the local computer that you're booting to.
Oh,
if you're connecting to network machines,
you have
no way of knowing what... Yeah, well, you're using Samba as a client.
Right.
But you don't need to know, and you have... actually don't have any way to know, really, for an end user casually anyway, to know what the file system is on the other end, but you don't really care. You're just opening up a network share.
Right.
So whatever it is, it doesn't matter. So this, but for your local machines, this is going to be a good thing.
You're hired, Peter. All right. Let's carry on here.
Sure. Power consumption, as we talked about, and I guess this is a feature of the kernel as well as the new power consumption features in GNOME. The new kernel allows your processor to use less power and produce less heat, so that means more battery life, and that's a good thing. Other things wrapping up, coming towards the end of the list here, encrypted hard disks. It's now able to encrypt an entire disk, whole disk encryption, built in natively.
Right.
So that's kind of neat. I like that idea. We need to do... It's basically something if your computer gets lost or stolen, people say, well, I've got a password on it. Well, you do, sure, but you should know that anybody who boots a machine with a live CD can access all of the data.
Right.
So if all of your stuff is encrypted, then you know it doesn't matter. People can boot off of a live CD or yank that hard drive out, and they still won't be able to get the data off without some fairly powerful decryption. And I forget how many, how long it's supposed to take, but prohibitively long to decrypt an encrypted hard drive like this.
Right.
So,
yeah. A lot of security stuff built in already into Ubuntu, and this is just one of those another added benefit to it. So, what have we got next? AppArmor security framework, of course, more security stuff.
Security.
Not too familiar with this. So, are you familiar with this?
I am not. I've read a little bit about it, but I have not used it for anything yet. So, I think I might check that out and plan on doing a tech segment in a future episode about it.
Okay. Well, what this says is it's an easy to deploy kernel technology that limits the resource of an application that it's allowed to access.
I'm excited about the installation profiles for Ubuntu Server. The new Ubuntu Server CDs will have additional installation profiles. Right now, I believe your options are basically you can install or you can install a LAMP server. And what that does is basically just deploys on the Ubuntu box Apache, MySQL, and PHP, and I think Perl and Python also, so you get all your scripting languages built in. But the new version will have additional profiles, so you can, say, set up a mail server, file server, or database server. And that's kind of cool because, if you have a small network at home and you just want to set up a little file server, you can just choose that profile and go. Or also, in a small business or, like I said, all those different profiles. So that's neat. Of course, with all of those profiles, you can always configure them and add the software manually, using the Update Manager or Aptitude or apt-get. But just making things a little easier, streamlining the installation, I think that'll be a good thing for sysadmins who don't want to spend a lot of time doing the installation of their systems.
It looks like it does it all by the numbers for you and just pick and choose. Is that, I'm pretty sure that's what it looks like. I'm going to have to get a server up and running one of these days.
It's not all that different. Running a Linux server and running a Linux desktop is actually pretty similar. It's just what you're doing with it.
That ought to just about cover some of the new things that are available in Ubuntu. Hopefully you've gotten a little bit of help with picking and choosing, and hopefully you've downloaded it by now. I am going to be switching over to Ubuntu on my laptop. Just the resources on my laptop are just not up to spec anymore to run Ubuntu, so I'm going to switch over to Zubuntu. And before we leave, we have one more news article to tell you, and that is coming from Peter.
Oh, Desktop Linux reports as of today that Kevin Carmody, the former CEO of Linspire, has publicly announced on the Ubuntu forums that he has switched to Ubuntu. Carmony wrote, "Now that I'm no longer the CEO of Linspire or under any obligation to use a particular distribution, I thought I should take some time and look around at all the distributions and decide which one was right for me and my PC. In addition to already being quite familiar with Linspire and FreeSpire, I also looked at Novell SUSE, Red Hat Fedora, PC Linux, Ubuntu, and Kubuntu. His decision? Well, after my research, I have to tell you, it was an easy choice. Ubuntu. I'm excited for the new release in a few days, and I will use it to replace the many Linux desktop and laptop PCs I own." So, there you go. The CEO, former CEO of Linspire, has jumped ship and is the latest convert to Ubuntu. Welcome aboard, Mr. Carmony.
Excellent. Yes, welcome aboard. And it seems like he's going to be really active in the community. You know, I would expect nothing less from a former CEO, and let's hope good things come out of it. Well, that should just about cover it for this week. Just let's do one last check on your downloads. How are they going, Peter?
Checking it out. Looks like I've got 1 day, 8 hours left in my download right now.
Nice.
Wait. We're back down to 4 hours and 30 minutes.
Great. Even better.
Yeah. Oh, I just love these download times that update themselves dynamically like that.
This time, you know, when I upgrade, I'm not actually upgrading my system. I'm going to just download the ISO and install a brand new one over my existing partition and getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a clean installation.
Clean install. So are you going to be losing any of your stuff? Are you going to back up your data and move it over?
I'm going to back up my data and move it over. But, you know, the home directory, I'll probably back that up and then move that over. But other than that, everything else is going to go, and I'm going to have to start again from scratch getting all the, you know, the essential stuff that they usually work with. But brand new installations, one. My laptop is going to run Zubuntu, and my desktop will, of course, run Ubuntu and Windows XP at the same time. So anyway, that's going to cover it for this week. I thank you very much for joining me. Thanks, Peter, for joining me again. You have any last words?
Yeah, go down and download Gutsy Gibbon right now.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it.
It'll take you a few days.
Now let's back that up a bit. I've got to think of some kind of better last words. You always have me, you ask me that, and I never remember. Never know what I want to say. Last words. Hold on. Any last words? I don't want these to be my last words.
Parting words. How about that? Any parting words, Peter?
Live long and prosper.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Live long and prosper, as Peter said, and we'll talk to you again next week with some more Gutsy Gibbon talk. Bye-bye now.
Welcome to the Man Page Minute. This week we're following up on the locate command with a related command called updateDB. That's all one word. And the updateDB command, it's a very simple command. It's generally included as a cron job in most Linux distros, Ubuntu included. And what it does is it tells the server to update a list of all the files on the file system so that the next time you run the locate command, it will be up to date. So it's updating the locate database. So generally you don't have to run this, but if you know a bunch of files on your system have changed recently, like say, you know, this morning, but your update DB is set to run in the dead of night, you can run this manually. Now you do have to have root privileges to do this, so if you're going to do it yourself, you would do sudo update DB, and that will update all the files on your file system. And the next time you run locate, you'll have an up-to-date list. That's your Man Page Minute, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week. We thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and hope also that you took the time to download Gutsy Gibbon. If you have anything of interest regarding Gutsy Gibbon, please don't hesitate to send us an email at freshubuntu@gmail.com, or you can also leave a comment at our website at freshubuntu.org. And so that is going to do it for this week. Again, the music was provided by Iota Promonet, and I think that's going to do it for this week. I think I've made as many announcements as I possibly can remember. And so with that, I hope you have a great week, and look forward again to next week's episode, where we talk a little bit more about Gutsy and some of the features that we actually used and liked. Look forward to that next week, and let's see. That's going to do it. Have a great week, and talk to you all again soon. Bye-bye.